Hi, I'm Erwin McManus, and this is the Mosaic Podcast. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And if you're one of our regular listeners, we love the fact that you journey with us. And we pray that every single message inspires you and helps you become the person that God created you to be. Every single week, we send a new message across the world. And everything we do here at Mosaic is made available to everyone in the world for absolutely free. The reason we can do that is that we have incredible people who give generously and sacrificially to make this possible. And I want to invite you to join us. If you're already a giver, thank you so much. If this is something you've not yet done, I want to invite you to start doing that now. Go to mosaic.org/give and give a one-time gift, or even beyond that, become a recurring giver here at Mosaic. And if you're one of those individuals who God has blessed in an amazing way financially, I want to invite you to become one of our partners here at Mosaic. What's really beautiful about Mosaic is that our biggest givers are families who do not live here in Los Angeles, but they are so committed to the message of Jesus going to the world that they support the work here from Los Angeles to the ends of the earth. And so I want to invite you again, go to mosaic.org/give, become a part of our support system, become one of our partners. And more than anything else, I want you to listen to the message, allow Jesus to speak to you in a way that will change your life.
So this is the last Sunday we're going to focus on some of the content inside of my my newest book, Mindshift. And for those of you who've been with us through these weeks, I just want to encourage you to keep working on the interior design of your mind. When I wrote Mindshift, it was really diving into a lifetime of struggling to become the person I long to become. Not to be who other people tell me I should be, or become who I feel obligated to become. But every one of us have this inner voice that tells us, this is not you, when we're living beneath our capacity. We have this inner voice that tells us, this is the best version of you. Or it's almost as if you look in the mirror and you don't see yourself. You see your potential self. You ever been there? And one of the great challenges is to feel this massive gap between the person you are and the person you long to become. And that's why the conversation around Mindshift is so important. Kim and I have been looking at, like, how do we rearrange our house? How do we make it feel fresh and new and optimize the space we have? And then she invited a couple of interior designers to come to the house and have a conversation with us, which didn't go that great because Kim began to feel like they didn't like what she had already done. I'm saying, honey, we don't like what we've already done. That's why we invited interior designers to come to the house. But she was like, they just looked at everything. You could just tell they didn't like it. We don't like it. And isn't it so challenging when you know you need a radical interior design, but then when someone points it out, we're like, who do they think they are to tell me I should change? But they're just agreeing with you. They're echoing back what you've already said. We didn't call an interior designer to come over to our house and say, wow, this is amazing. It's exactly the way we would do it. That'll be $500 an hour for affirmation you do not deserve. I think that's what a lot of us actually want, even when we go to therapy. We want affirmation we haven't earned. And I think that's why we discard friends quickly. Because we want friends who tell us the interior design of who we are is exactly the way it should be, even when we know that we have a lot of junk in the living room we need to move out of the way. And so I say, began thinking about how to close this conversation. It was a little challenging because I kept thinking about different chapters, and I thought I should go to the last chapter so we have a sense of completion, but this is the reality. We're going to end on chapter 4. And the reason for that is because the journey toward the interior design of your mind, of your inner world, it never ends. There is no last chapter. There's just the last chapter before the next chapter of your life. But I wanted to go back to chapter 4, maybe because of my own personal journey, my own personal experience, and maybe because this is the chapter where I have probably so many wounds that I could write an entire book on this. Chapter 4 is simply called, They Won't Get It Until You Do It. Now, when I say they, and I know you're never supposed to say they, because they're out to get us, whoever they are. They did this to me, whoever they are. I find a lot of times in life, they are actually me. And maybe it's not just that they won't get it until you do it. Maybe you won't get it until you do it. See, maybe you actually are affected by what they think because they are resonating and echoing what you actually think. But whatever the nuances are, I want to just focus on this particular mind shift that if you need other people to get you until you get you, you're never going to get there. They won't get it until you do it. There are so many things in life that are unique to who you are as a human being that no one else may understand the choices you're making, the direction you're going, and the life you're living. Because you don't even fully understand. You just know you're following something that's magnetically pulling you forward. I want to read a couple of passages that will discourage you from living a uniquely beautiful life. Because I think a lot of times people want to read the parts of the Bible that just give us one side of the story. We all want to be great, but we want to ignore the journey and the price required for that greatness. We all want to live lives of faith, but we don't really want to dive in and look at what faith really looks like. So in Hebrews 11, beginning in verse 29, I want to read to you some of the most discouraging verses in the Bible. It says, by faith the people passed through the Red Sea, as on dry land, but the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomes the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. So far, so good, right? And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. This is incredible, right? So far, we're all on the same page. We're ready to go. If this is what a life of faith looks like, if this is what it means to step into a life that no one else will get until you do it, you're in, right? That's why it's important to keep reading. There were others. And there's this category in life that I call the others. Because we don't want to think about the others. We want to be, no, the other others. We want to be the others that were just mentioned, the ones who lived such extraordinary lives, had incredible success, had all the outcomes that we would hope for, but there were others. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith. Yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us they would be made perfect. The reason this passage is so critical to understanding what a journey of faith looks like, what your unique life looks like, is that so oftentimes we connect faith with outcomes. You know you have faith if you win, right? You know you have faith if you succeed. You know you have faith if you survive the lion's den. You know you have faith if you kill the giant. You know you have faith if everything works towards your advantage. But what the scriptures actually want us to make sure we understand is that faith is not about the outcome at all. And it just drives me crazy when people will stand on a platform and tell you the reason you're not succeeding is that you do not have enough faith. When someone will look at you and say the reason you're going through a hard time, the reason you're going through pain is because you do not have enough faith. Because they should read the rest of the chapter. And I want you to understand, sometimes in life, and I don't think it's always a permanent condition, but I think sometimes in life, you are the others. Sometimes in life, I am the others. And it's really frustrating because I would be okay if we were all the others. But I'm not okay when I'm the others and you're not. Because when your life is going really well and my life is not going really well, it's hard to celebrate you. And it's even harder when you go, oh, it's because I have so much faith. Because there's a self-righteousness that seems to be attached to personal success. My success is proof that I'm better than you. That my life is more valuable than yours, that I'm more talented than you, more intelligent than you, whatever it may be. But what he wants us to know is that God is not interested in how other people measure your life. But what he's actually telling us is that every single human being has a unique calling, and that calling separates you. See, the reason they won't get it until you do it is because your life is not their calling. Your calling is not their life. And whenever, this is just, it's just hard, especially if you're a parent. When you're a parent, you already know what your kid's perfect life looks like. And parenting is a subtle manipulation to get them to become who you want them to become. Come on, we don't say that out loud. But we know it, it's hugely true. And it's the same way when the moment you move into any kind of community, if you live the way I want you to live, if you make the choices I want you to make, then you're doing great. You're right on track. If I can predict your life, understand your life, if I can approve of your life, then you're doing great. Except for one problem. No two lives are supposed to be the same. No two journeys are supposed to match. It's actually the calling that separates you. If you look like everyone else, you are not embracing your calling. You're embracing someone else's calling. I think that's a huge problem. A lot of times, people with huge personalities, people with massive charisma, people with huge ego needs, convince everyone that their calling is everyone's calling. And if you're not sure about who you are, you begin living someone else's expectations for your life. If you're not sure about who you are, you start living out someone else's calling on your life. That's why it's so important to hear the unique calling on your life and step into that, because no one will get it until you do it. The first line of verse 29 is sort of an interesting line. It says, by faith, the people, speaking of Israel, with Moses. And sometimes it's interesting. I didn't realize in the last few weeks that a lot of people don't realize the Bible is all about people who were slaves. We've been hearing all kinds of language about, you know, who were the oppressors, who were the oppressed, who were the colonizers, who were not the colonizers. And just from a historical perspective, I want you to realize that Israel spent their entire history as slaves. There are a few brief moments where they were free, but it was like, and then they're back. It's sort of like when you're drowning. You come up for a little bit of air, but then you're back. And they were almost indiscriminate about who colonized them. It was the Romans, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Egyptians. It's just Israel went from one colonizer to another, always being a slave. And I know it was really controversial, but in one of my books I wrote, Jesus was born a slave, and that's hard for people to understand. He was born under an oppressive power that was known as the Roman Empire. And yes, the Roman Empire transformed pasta, and we should be grateful for what Italy has brought to the world. But it was not a good thing to be under the oppressive power of the Roman Empire. And so all the stories that you read about, Moses and Daniel and Joseph and Esther, every one of them are the stories of people who lived their lives under the oppressive hand of another power. All their success are the stories of how God can take a slave and raise them up to incredible prominence and power. That's why I love the scriptures, because God is always for the underdog. God is always for the oppressed. And yet it says here, by faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry ground, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. So it lets you know that the moment the Egyptians tried to live out the journey of the Israelites, it did not go well for them. And that's what your life will be like when you're trying to live out someone else's calling. And when you're trying to chase someone else's success. Envy is a terrible fuel for life. When you try to live someone else's life because you want their life, you want what they've achieved, you want their success, you're going to be miserable, even if you achieve it. Because you're pursuing the wrong thing. Because in a very, very beautiful way, God parts a particular sea for you. And it's not for anyone else. It's for you. But a part of what God is waiting for you to embrace is the uniqueness of his calling on your life. I look back, and you know, I've had an opportunity now to live for a long time. It's crazy. When I just wake up and realize, wow, I'm 65. I mean, I'm just like a year away from death. It's incredible. It's like how I didn't know I could get this old. It's crazy. It's a crazy feeling. And yet one of the things that I realize is I go back over decades, and every time I had an idea, I was shocked how many people were against it. You guys are too young to know this, but there was a season where when the internet was new, people created a website with an hourglass of the day they're going to kill me because my ideas bothered them so much. I kept thinking, well, maybe my ideas are dangerous, but I'm not the most dangerous person in the world. Pick someone else to kill. But they were picking me. I don't know if anything terrifies people as much as ideas no one else has yet thought or embraced. And I can tell you that if everyone agrees with everything you do, if everyone agrees with everything you say, if everyone agrees with everything you are, you're living someone else's life, not yours. Because your calling separates you. Are you separating yourself from the average, the status quo? Are you separating yourself from mediocrity and standardization and conformity? Is your life an expression of the uniqueness that God has placed in you? Of course, it's hard to know that if you don't know God. You'll never fully understand. You ever done something really stupid and you don't know why? Thank you for that, and I appreciate that. I started looking back at my life, and I realized, like, I used to take a lot of risks. Well, I still take a good number of risks. But a lot of it was just for the thrill. And sometimes it was just for the stupidity. You know what I mean? Because I was bored with me. You ever just, like, you wake up and go, oh, my gosh, you are the most boring person I know. But I'm trapped inside of you. I can't escape you. So there were times in my life I've just done crazy things just to try to shake myself out of being bored with myself. I think what happens is sometimes if you ever just done a stupid thing, like taken a stupid risk or gone into a stupid relationship, some of you know what I'm talking about because you're still in it. You know what I'm talking about. Oh, wow. Sorry, I shouldn't have gone there. Whoa. We're going to have to go into some deep therapy after that one. All right. I have a feeling the reason you do those stupid things is because you know that you're called to something unique, but you don't know what it is. Or if you know what it is, you haven't had the courage to step into it. So a lot of times we try to distract ourselves from our uniqueness by doing something self-destructive. But by the way, the life calls you, the life that God calls you to, it's dangerous enough without you endangering yourself. Because the calling separates you, but it also, the cost separates others. Each person along the way had a price to pay. And even though some of their stories came out really, really well, the reason other people didn't choose their lives is that the cost separated them. See, if you're not separating yourself, it's because you're not elevating yourself. You have to ask yourself, what are the choices I'm making in my life right now that someone else is going, you're out of your mind? And whenever I'm playing it safe, I know it. And here's the dangerous thing. You can have a level of success where other people think you're awesome, and you're really just cruising in status quo. You don't have any momentum. You're just using the momentum from the past to impress everyone, even though you're losing your future. But when you start making choices, when you hear God speak into your life, when you embrace the calling God has for you, it begins to separate you, because other people will not pay the price that you are willing to pay for your life. By the way, it's not talent. That's why I didn't speak on the chapter called Talent is a Hallucinogen, because even though I wrote it, I can't pronounce the word hallucinogen, so I didn't want to challenge myself to have to talk for 45 minutes and keep using that word. And I should have just said talent is an illusion. But it's not really an illusion. Talent is real. And so I wanted to say talent is an illusion, but that would not have been accurate. Your talent isn't an illusion. You may be in an illusion about how much talent you have, but that's different. Talent is real, but talent can be a hallucinogen, because it convinces you you can cut every other corner because you're so talented. But one of the challenges, though, is that it isn't talent that will separate you in the end. I mean, have you noticed how many talented people end up with the same last chapter of their story? It didn't separate them. It made them the same. I mean, I'm like, really? You had that much success. You had that much talent. You had that much genius. And all you could think about was destroying your life by being abusive and addictive and destructive. You ended up with the same story as so many other people, that you actually ended common and not unique. Yeah. The destructive choices in your life make you the same, not different. You want to end uncommon? Don't let wealth destroy you. Don't let fame crush you. Don't let your ego destroy every relationship in your life. Don't die alone with things. That's what's going to make you unique. So your calling, it will actually separate you, because you're willing to pay a price. It's not talent that elevates you. It is actually sacrifice that elevates you. When you're willing to pay the price to be great at something in your life. That's why I love the transitional phrase in verse 32. And what more shall I say? It's like, haven't we said enough? He goes, no, there's more to say. There's so much more to say, because through faith, some conquered kingdoms, some administered justice, some gained what was promised, some shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength. I love that phrase, because it lets us know that the men and women who live with extraordinary faith were not just naturally strong. So you may think you're a different species than people who live big lives. You're not. They were weak. I'm weak. You're weak. And we find strength in that weakness. They were not born without fear. They were afraid. I'm afraid. You're afraid. And they rose above that fear. Whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. And then the others were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even greater resurrection. And listen to what he's saying. He's saying not only did their calling separate them, but the cost separated them from others. They were given a way out. And by the way, every day of your life, you will be given a way out of your greatest life. Every day of your life, you're going to be given a way out of your greatness. Every day of your life, you're going to be given a way out of your calling. You just have to decide the answer is no. You're the one. You're the only one who can wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to pay the price to live out my calling. I'm going to pay the price to live out the life that God created me to live. I'm not going to live beneath my capacity, beneath my potential, beneath my design, beneath my calling. And other people will think you're out of your mind. You can tell them I am out of my mind, because I have another mind informing me. See, it's the process that actually demands faith, not the outcome. You don't become rich because you have enough faith. You suffer through the pain because you have enough faith. You don't become famous because you had enough faith. You suffer through the aloneness of what it means to be known by everyone and known by no one. And you took on the price and you carried it. It's the process that actually takes faith. It's kind of easy when you win. And that's why it's so interesting watching athletes. I think they've kind of changed the narrative, but it's like, what do you do when you believe in God? And then you say, you know, I talked to God, we're going to win. And then you lose. I was talking to God, but I wasn't listening. See, God doesn't measure wins and losses the way we measure wins and losses. He just looks at you and he says, I want to craft you to become the most extraordinary version of you. And whether it's a win that will get you there or a loss that will get you there, it's incidental to me. I don't think I've ever had a moment in my life where I thought, God, why did you do this to me? You know, when Kim and I were sitting in the doctor's office and they told me I had cancer, I didn't have that thought. Why me, God? In fact, if anything, my thought was, why not me? If anything, when I learned I had cancer, what really came to my mind was, now I get to know what's inside of me. I get to have a level of discovery about who I've actually become that I would not have had without this crisis in my life. Would I have wished to never have cancer? Absolutely. I am not a masochist. Could I have learned things about myself another way? I don't know. To wake up one morning and find out my business partner had wiped out my company, I lost millions of dollars in a day, of course it traumatized me. I couldn't eat for 30 days. I lost so much weight, it was amazing. It was like better, you know, than Weight Watchers. I couldn't hold food down for 30 days. Would I have wished for that to not happen? Of course, of course. Did I learn things about myself? In fact, I can tell you, I'm more unstoppable now because of those failures in my life. Because it's true. Because before those moments, I don't know if I was sure whether I could take that. See, some of you, you're playing it so safe, you don't even know how strong you are. Some of you are just so cautious, you're never going to discover how much faith you actually have. God never tests your faith to show you how little you are. God tests your faith so you can discover how big he is in you. It's the process that takes faith. It's interesting, a couple of weeks ago, Kim and I and Mariah and some of our team, we were in El Salvador, which some of you know that's where I'm from, probably everyone, because I talk about it, because I love El Salvador. And we got to meet with the president, which I mentioned, Nayib Bukele. And we had this great conversation, but one of the things he said was this. He said, we had just faced the most violent day in our history. I wanted to make sure I got the numbers accurate. 62 people were murdered in one day in El Salvador by the pandillas, the gangs. The most violent day in El Salvador's history as the most violent country in the world. And then when they decided to go after MS-13 and 18th Street Gang and the other gangs that controlled the country through terrorism, he said it was a terrifying thing. He said it was a terrifying thing to know that there were 70,000 terrorists in our nation and that they killed 62 people one day and it was a massacre. And so the moment they heard we're coming after them, if they all just killed one person, we would have had 70,000 people killed in one day. He said it was terrifying to realize that we could have the greatest massacre in human history in one day. He said, and when we went after the gangs, he goes, we knew we had to have some kind of miracle. Somehow the gangs had to be blinded to their power. Because if they had just started killing people, they could have killed 70,000 if all of them just killed one person. And if they'd killed two or three or four, it could have been a national massacre of hundreds of thousands of people. And so when he goes, when we moved, we needed a miracle, something we could not control. We needed them to somehow not remember how violently powerful they were, and we needed them to run in fear. And they did. The most violent gangs in the world began hiding under their beds and running into the woods. They forgot how powerful they were in their evil. They needed a miracle. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, this is amazing. See, it was the process that took faith. It wasn't the outcome. They didn't even know what the outcome would be. To have a nation that had not had one day without a murder, to suddenly have over 300 days to become the safest country in Latin America is nothing less than a miracle. But we can celebrate outcomes, but that's just cheap. It's so easy to celebrate people when they win. It's so easy to celebrate people when they succeed. It's so easy to celebrate people when they have what we want, when they have wealth or power or fame or position or whatever it may be that you want. How about celebrating people because of the process? Celebrate people while they're at the beginning of their journey. Celebrate them while they're sacrificing. Celebrate them while they're risking. Celebrate that person who's working hard right now, has nothing to offer you. No, man, I see you. I see you. I love the choices you're making. And I want you to know that God sees you. And when you wake up and you commit to live the life you're created to live, God loves the choices you're making. He's not waiting for the outcome to celebrate you. Because one thing that God makes clear is that there is no easy road if you embrace your calling. And I started thinking about how faith has this interesting relationship. It's almost like we have level one faith and level two faith. Like level one faith is doing what you've never done. Have you ever done that? I've never done this before. I'm so afraid. But other people have done it. It's just you haven't done it. And so it's level one faith because it's faith for you. I've never done this before. It's outside of your experience. It's the improbable. And most people, just getting you to level one faith is a miracle. You can do this. Other people have done it. There's proof that it can be done. It's not impossible. It's just improbable for you. But level two faith is doing what no one has ever done. Outside of your capacity, it's in the realm of the impossible. I don't know about you, but I don't want to live just in level one faith. I don't want to just always think it's faith that I'm doing what I've never done. I want to live at a level of faith where I'm doing what no one's ever done. I want to be proof that the impossible is possible. I want to be transient. Maybe it was impossible until one person did it. Maybe it just shifts from a dimensional reality. It's impossible, but the moment you step into it, it shifts from its dimension into your dimension. Now it's possible because you made it possible when you stepped into it with your faith. I want to translate the impossible and make it possible. How about you? I have all these friends who are incredibly competitive and super successful. And they're always like buying another house and buying another plane and buying another boat and buying another thing. And they're incredible. I mean, I'm just always amazed by their capacity, but they're always saying like, who's the best? Who's the best? Who's the top? I started reading the scriptures and evaluating like my own life journey. I realized, oh, I've never tried to get to the top. I've always tried to get to the edge. See, there's a difference. When you get to the top, you're just climbing a path other people created. But when you get to the edge, you're going where no one has ever gone before. So maybe it's time we stop trying to get to the top and start trying to get to the edge. Maybe you're supposed to prove that a life like yours is possible. See, maybe you're supposed to be proof to someone else. Oh, wow. If God can use her like that, maybe God could use me. Oh, wow. If God could change his life like that, maybe God could change my life too. Let's stop trying to get to the top and letting other people decide what success is like. Let's start getting to the edge and expanding what people thought was ever possible as a human. Just be the best version of you. Embrace your calling. And don't worry about the applause. Don't worry about other people understanding, because they won't get it until you do it. Oh, by the way, that's what Jesus said. Listen to his words. In John 13:7 to his disciples, Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." See, when God stepped into human history 2,000 years ago, nobody got it. When God took on flesh and blood and walked among us, no one could get it. When God took on the name Jesus, which means Savior, it's sort of on the nose, I know, but he has artistic license since he created everything. And as he walked among us from this obscure little place called Bethlehem in a town called Nazareth, for whatever reason, he chose to do it that way, to be poor, to be humble, to be simple, to be a commoner. They just couldn't get it. They couldn't see it. And then when his life was being threatened and he was going to be crucified, his followers were trying to protect him. They said, "You need to stay away from Jerusalem. It's not a safe place for you." And he said, "No, that's where I'm going." They go, "No, you're going to get killed." And he goes, "No, I know. This is what needs to happen." They couldn't get it. And even when Jesus said, "If I be lifted up, I will draw all of humanity to myself," they just couldn't get it. And when they crucified him and he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And then he says, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." They couldn't get it. They just couldn't get it. And then they took his lifeless body and put it in a tomb that was borrowed from someone else because he didn't have enough money to pay for a tomb. They just couldn't get it. They're all hanging around, hiding in a room, afraid for their lives because they'd put all their trust in Jesus, and now he was dead and he failed. They really couldn't get it. And then when Jesus shows up on Sunday, which is, by the way, why we show up on Sunday, and they're shocked and they see his hands with wounds and his feet with wounds. And by the way, if you can conquer death, couldn't you fix a few wounds? I mean, there are cosmetic surgeons that can take care of that here in LA. So he clearly knew that he needed to have proof that it was him, because they couldn't get it. And then as he rose from the dead, and instead of coming with vengeance and revenge against those who killed him, he came with forgiveness and an offer of life. They just couldn't get it. But Jesus, more than all of us, understood, they won't get it until you do it. And so 2,000 years later, we are here because we finally get it, because he did it. God came into human history for you. He died on a cross for you. He rose from the dead so that you could have forgiveness of everything you've ever done that you regret and the things you don't even know you should regret. He came to set you free from your shame and your guilt and your brokenness and the darkness that eats away at you. And the beautiful thing is he's been waiting for you to get it, to finally see that everything you've ever searched for can only be found in him. Would you bow your head to me just for a moment? Close your eyes. They won't see it until you do it. That's the life God invites you into. A life so beautiful, so overwhelming, so wonderful, so full of life and love and freedom and forgiveness that people will think you've lost your mind because you're so free. You're so free to be you and who he created you to be. That's what Jesus invites you into. And he knew that we wouldn't get it until he did it. But he did it for us. He gave his life so that you could live. And if you're here in this moment, you've never crossed the line of faith. You've never come to that place where you have trusted your life to Jesus. I want to invite you right now to make this the moment everything changes for you. I want to invite you right now just to whisper this simple prayer to God. Jesus, I give you my life. That's it. That's the starting point. Right now, just tell him, Jesus, I give you my life. Jesus, I give you my life. Just tell him. That's all he's waiting for. He wants to put his life in you. He's just a gentleman. He's waiting for permission to make you whole. He's waiting for permission to forgive you completely. He's waiting for permission to set you free. He's waiting for permission to make you new. Will you give him permission today by saying, Jesus, I give you my life? If this is your prayer, I want to pray for you. If in this moment you've whispered this prayer, Jesus, I give you my life, I want you just courageously right now without hesitation to raise your hand up high and let me see you. Beautiful, beautiful, all around the room. Anyone else? Beautiful, beautiful. Anyone else? Jesus, I give you my life. Anyone else? Beautiful. Father, I thank you for each person that in this moment has opened up their life to you. I pray you would wrap them up in your love. Let them know they belong to you and that you will never leave them. You will never abandon them. They don't have to be good enough. You are good enough. All they have to do is be honest and open to you. Invite you into their lives. I thank you, God, that this is the beginning of a new life for so many people. We're so grateful for you, Jesus, that you would give your life so we could live. And we pray in your name. Amen. Amen. Can we just thank God for all those who respond to him? So good.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the Mosaic Podcast. As God has spoken into your life, one of the things that Jesus teaches us is that when we've been invested in, we need to also become investors. And I want to encourage you right now, if Mosaic is one of the platforms from which you grow spiritually, you connect more deeply to God, and your faith with Jesus becomes more real, I want to encourage you right now to go to mosaic.org and become one of our givers. Give a one-time gift, become a recurring giver, become a part of what God's doing across the world. Mosaic isn't just a church in Los Angeles. Mosaic is all of us working together.